You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges. And follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Welcome to this Friends of Europe conversation with Commissioner Lord Hill, Jonathan Hill. My name is Giles Merritt. For those I haven't met, I'm the Secretary General of Friends of Europe. Lord Hill's portfolio looks very technocratic, financial services and so on. It looks like Brussels at its best. But my feeling, it'd be interesting to see what the Commissioner thinks and what people here think, is that it's actually one of the most crucially important portfolios in the whole range of Commission responsibilities. And the reason I say that is that it's an area of enormous weakness, that we Europeans have not been as good at mobilizing resources, financial and otherwise, as we should. And I'm always put in mind of American venture capitalists. I remember a man in San Francisco doing the Silicon Valley financing who said to me, "I never look at anybody who hasn't been bankrupted twice, because that shows they've got grit and they're real goers." Well, you try going to a European bank when you've been bankrupted once, and that's the end of the story. And it seems to me that the Capital Markets Union, which Commissioner Hill has really got, I suppose, at the top of his priority list, is absolutely vital. We need to get the banks lending more, but we also need to be less reliant on the banks. So you're going to report on the consultations you've had, I think, by September, and you produced a green paper in February, if I remember right, and the consultation period ended at the end of last month. What's the outlook?
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for giving me this chance to come along. And I think your point about it being a technocratic sounding job, but also an important and political job, actually both of those are true. And I think political in the sense that the biggest priority of the new Commission is growth and jobs. And I see my job, both through the Capital Markets Union, but also what I'm trying to do more generally on financial regulation, as making an important contribution to growth and jobs. On Capital Markets Union, what's the outlook? I'm actually very encouraged by the response that there has been so far to the consultation and to the plans that we have been setting out. So we have been to nearly every member state. We will have done all of them by the summer. And the response that we've had from all 28 through the ECOFIN has been very supportive. And I think people realize, and I think you summed it up extremely well, that the need to find alternative ways of making investment flow through the EU, and at its most simple, of linking savers more effectively with growth, is something that we set out as a goal, the free movement of capital, nearly 60 years ago. We've made progress. We haven't got there. I think, as you say, it's good in its own terms, but also in financial stability terms. You know, when we have a model as we have in Europe, which is very dependent on bank financing, and you then have a contraction, as we've had, then the knock-on to the whole economy and therefore to financial stability is very strong. So I think having a more diversified source of funding will be good if we get it right, to give businesses at different stages in their development more options, whether it's venture capital at an early stage. Maybe, you know, still most small businesses will get the funding from the bank. Other options as they develop. Whether it's more opportunities for savers to save for their old age and retirement, which we also need because the demographic challenge that we face in Europe is enormous. It's increasing opportunities for funding to go to businesses, investment into infrastructure, but also, I think, helping with financial stability. So overall... I think we've got off to an encouraging start. There's been, as I said, strong support from member states. And wherever I've gone, I think a whole variety of member states have been very keen to stress that they're committed, whether I've been in Paris or in Madrid or in Amsterdam or in Dublin yesterday. So I think we've got the wind in the sails politically to tackle some old issues with new energy. I think there's been very good support in the Parliament as well, and they are bringing forward a resolution on it shortly. I think I've been very much at pains to try and build something with people, talking to consumer organisations, talking obviously to the industry, and to try and take an approach where we can... we're ambitious for the long term. We make some early progress where there is broad agreement, which actually things like securitization, reviewing the prospectus directive, there is. So we'll come out of the traps fast, get some building blocks in, I hope create a sense of confidence and forward momentum, and then work our way through what we think the main obstacles are to the free movement of capital, and that runs across a very wide range, and then you know, come back with proposals over time as to how we'll tackle them.
Can I ask what the sort of time frame is? I mean, you started off with your green paper, which set out in rather general terms what the aim was. You had the consultation period, and presumably in September, you're going to tell us what the Commission's proposal is going to look like. Over the last few months, there have been various, I don't know if they were leaks, inspired leaks, or just made up by journalists. I speak as a former journalist. Some of them were very ambitious. A super regulator, for instance, in a Europe where the last time I counted, there were a bit over 80 national regulators of one sort or another. Also, a harmonisation that looked as if it was edging towards harmonisation of some of the fiscal arrangements on capital market activities and so on. Can you say that this has got the political wind in the sails? Can you give us an idea of what... Are we looking at something that's going to be rather dramatic, and people will say, well, yes, that is the natural successor to the single market in goods and services? Or is it going to be something rather more technocratic, like, for instance, the banking union, which I think quite a lot of people not only have divided views about, but very many of us don't really understand? So is it going to be a big deal, or is it going to be a Brussels deal?
Well, I take issue with your description of banking union as being merely technocratic. I mean, I think that was a hugely political and significant step, for which I can claim no responsibility whatsoever, although I do now have the task of making sure it's implemented properly. I think the... I mean, obviously, I understand the way you have put the question. I think it is... I am ambitious in terms of what I want to achieve. Ambition, sometimes, I think, in is used as a word, as shorthand, sometimes, Brussels in particular, to mean some certain things. You know, will it will it have certain characteristics, and will you want to be pursuing a kind of classic visionary approach towards these things, slightly irrespective of what the result is. And the truth is, I think it is possible to combine long-term ambition with also having an approach which I think has been strongly supported in the feedback on the green paper, and as I travel around the place, which is to proceed step by step in a bottom-up, pragmatic way. And the reason for saying that is that I think that if we can make very rapid progress, which I'm very keen to do, on some big issues at the outset, start moving it forward, put those in place, demonstrate to people that you're able to deliver that, help people see where you're trying to go, that you are more likely to achieve some tangible benefits soon than if you pick all the most difficult, totemic issues and start by charging headfirst into a brick wall. And I come back to my point about the linkage to growth and jobs. I think with 24 million people out of work, I'm more interested in trying to do some things that will help on the ground get investment flowing more quickly than I am in taking a more theoretical approach that, because of some of the political difficulties, so, you know, in the area of taxation, which was one that you talked about, which obviously is the,
the trickiest
one, but there are also questions around insolvency and so on and so forth, that to me it's more important to start banking things and put your roots down, demonstrate to people what some of the benefits of these are, and then move forward on the other issues. And the whole point of the consultation, the whole point of the Green Paper, was to start with an analysis of the problems rather than to start with a set of conclusions, to see what it was that people who wanted to deliver a single market in capital, whether that is businesses or consumer organisations, broader society, member states, what they see as the problems being. And when you can identify what those are, then I think the logic is that you then have to start to identify what the solutions to those problems are. And I think if you've got that evidence base, and if you've got the fact, which indeed the consultation shows, that insolvency law, for instance, is a recurring theme, that if you want people to understand, what happens in different marketplaces if they invest and what will happen if things don't work out, that having a system that operates more broadly is something that would help encourage the flow of investment. I think if you then establish that case, you then have to confront ways of dealing with that and what the political realities are. But I think it helps if you've been through the process of doing the analysis and then coming up in a rational and staged way with what the solutions might be.
Well, it's interesting you just used the word process, because I was about to ask to what extent is the Capital Markets Union going to be a rather open-ended process instead of a sort of nice, neat package that can be presented either at the end of this commission or during its tenure.
I think it is an open-ended process, because I think if I were to say to you that in now slightly under 4.5 years' time, we will have answers to everything that has eluded us for 60 years, you would quite rightly think that I was suffering from delusions of grandeur, apart from the fact that there are lots of issues that need to be addressed. Some will require legislation, some won't, but if you think you then need to identify them, you then need to legislate, you then need to implement, markets then need to respond, people then need to start making decisions on the back of it. So the idea that within 4.5 years, you would have got to, you know, you've got the Holy Grail, I don't think is a realistic one. And I think that is why President Juncker, in his letter to me when I got the post, said actually that my brief is to put the building blocks for the Capital Markets Union in place by 2019. And I think that is, you know, what my task is. But quite a lot of these things, you can't legislate to make people invest. What you can try and do is put in place the structures, the incentives, the framework, that this is something that becomes attractive and that they want to do. But, you know, the development and also the complex of issues as to why it is, as you rightly said at the beginning, we are so different from the United States. You know, this is not just about legislation, it's about culture, it's about history, it's about behaviour, and those are all things that you have to tackle and address over time, but you start quickly, you keep at it. I mean, this is a sustained effort, so your earlier question, is this a, you know, I can't remember how you put it, but is this a real exercise or just a kind of...
Is it a big stunt deal or a Brussels deal?
I did remember what you said, but I didn't think I put it like that. It is going to be, well, to use a phrase which is relevant for this week, the anniversary of Waterloo, it's going to be hard pounding. We're going to have to keep it going and keep working at it and grinding it down. So I think from that point of view, it's a big deal, and I'm not interested in something that, you know, makes a reasonable headline for a day and then nothing happens. I am more interested in trying to play my part, to do something, to contribute to what I think is the biggest challenge that we have in Europe, is this huge economic challenge, bringing Europe close to people so they can see the benefits of it. And my earlier point, you've got 24 million people out of work. What I can do on this, and the way that I will look at all the financial regulation, to try and make sure, as much as we can, we strike the right balance between mitigating risk and enabling growth. It's that thought that is impelling me to try to look at these issues and address them as intelligently as we can, recognising that we won't get everything right.
Mention of Waterloo makes me wonder, do we have a situation where the British are worrying about the French and waiting for the Germans? Put another way, let's talk about the rather deep cultural differences between the Anglo-Saxon view of financial services and banking, continental model rather different, and also the Americans. I mean, perhaps I should preface this by saying, when Jean-Claude Juncker decided that this was a portfolio for the British commissioner, opinions were sort of rather divided. They said either Juncker's made a mistake, or it's incredibly clever. And there was sort of quite a division along those two lines. So I wondered, how do you see the cultural differences between the City of London, which after all has managed to attract and create a huge international marketplace where most of the bankers seem to be non-Brits nowadays, and how do you see that vis-a-vis continental Europe and also the United States, because we could talk about TTIP in a little while.
Well, on your point as to whether it was a terrible mistake or an inspired idea, time will tell. On your broader kind of cultural point, I think actually reactions to the Capital Markets Union is to some extent a counterpoint to the traditional view that one might have, and that I think the shorthand view is that, you know, there's America, Britain is somewhere between America, and then there's Europe, and these values are all kind of, you know, different and in some way incompatible. I don't feel that coming here. I mean, first of all, I think on general issues, there is sometimes, I think, a view in the UK that the UK feels that it's very different from other countries on the mainland. And although, obviously, there are kind of historic and cultural, geographical reasons, you know, why we are different. One of the first things that struck me was on a large number of issues, many issues, actually, is that there are many people who share similar outlooks and views that people in Britain would think of as being British views. So if I think of the priorities of the Commission, if I think of Mr. Juncker's priorities on the single market, three major single market projects, if I think of the push on free trade, if I think of the push being led by Mr. Timmermans on better regulation, these are all things that actually in the UK they'd say, oh, you know, these are things, you know. So that's a first general point, that I don't quite buy the sort of bifurcated view of the one and the other. And I think on capital markets, generally, the point that I was trying to make earlier about the reaction that I've had in going around a whole range of different capitals, where if the way you were putting the question were true, you might think that in certain member states they'd say, well, what's all this stuff about capital markets then? Why do we need those things? And aren't they, you know, isn't that all a bit dangerous sounding? That has not been the reaction that I've had. Yeah. On the contrary, the reaction universally has been, okay, we have a model that has been very heavily dependent on bank financing. We've seen what that means. And, you know, you hear this very clearly from SMEs and other businesses that want the investment. Therefore, this is a very good idea to try to increase the options and to diversify our funding sources. So that... I don't know, because I wasn't here, I don't know if a few years ago, you know, you might expect that the reaction would have been different or more quizzical. But I've not encountered a quizzical response. I mean, clearly, when we get to the point of specific proposals, then that's going to be the point at which, you know, people engage properly. But in terms of the idea, in terms of the analysis of the benefits, in terms of, you know, the early priorities set out about encouraging a return to simple and standardized transparent securitization, reviewing the prospectus directive, looking at how you can make it easier for companies to invest in infrastructure, what can you do to encourage venture capital? I think people generally are very supportive.
I want to open it up to questions in a little while, but before that, I'd just like to ask what I think is a tricky question. What are you going to do about shadow banking? I mean, shadow banking, I'm sure everybody here knows much better than I, has grown by 50% since the collapse of Lehman Brothers and everything that followed. And it's the non-banking finance by anything, derivatives, hedge funds, all sorts of weird and wonderful special purpose vehicles, I think is the sort of the weasel word. In a way, they're what we want, because the banks aren't really delivering. And I think it was Standard & Poor who came up with a figure not long ago saying what SMEs in Europe need over the five-year period we're now in is €3.5 trillion euros of financing, which is miles and miles away from what they're getting at the moment. So one side of us thinks shadow banking not so bad. The other side says, my God, it's dangerously volatile. So what's the EU, in other words, Commissioner, you going to do about shadow banking?
Part of the issue about shadow banking is the name. As you've implied, it sounds as though it's shady. And I think a couple of points, therefore, to address the question. The first is that a lot of steps... I mean, I think people, looking back over the last 5, 6, 7 years, are aware of the steps that were taken in individual countries, but more particularly at the EU level, to strengthen bank regulation. Alongside those, my predecessor took a number of measures. I can go through the acronyms of their names, to regulate non-bank finance, you know, whether that was through EMIR, through MIFID, which is going through the AIFMD. These were all major pieces of regulation to regulate non-bank finance. And I think it's interesting if you look at the work being done in the Financial Stability Board. So the Financial Stability Board is the big global standard setter for financial regulation. Mark Carney, who is the chairman of it, they are trying... we'll see whether they succeed, to change the name from shadow banking to market-based finance, because they have taken your basic point that what's in a name, well, actually quite a lot. So I think they clearly accept the distinction that there is between market-based finance, which you want to encourage, and then activity... where you need to be attentive to risk and you might need to regulate further. So my answer to your question, I think, is a subset of my answer to a question about regulation generally, which is you should try to identify where risk is, take a risk-based approach. You need to be attentive to new emerging risks, and then act if you need to. You need to strive as hard as you can to avoid a one-size-fits-all approach to regulation, to treat everything exactly the same, because the sideswipe effects of doing that, if you want to encourage investment and growth and jobs, could be you need to be conscious of. And then regulate appropriately. And so that's why, in some areas of new risk, these central counterparties, these clearinghouses, where a lot of the risk of some of those things you were talking about, derivatives trading, were concentrated, we are bringing forward a proposal later this year on how you could resolve them if they got into a mess. So that would be an example of saying, okay, here is something in non-bank financing where we think there is a risk, and therefore we'll act. We need to keep our eyes open, and we need to act where we need to. But it's also why I'm quite keen, as I said before, that on regulation that we've passed already in other areas, we should revisit it if we need to make sure that we got the balance right in some of the things we've already passed. Because over 5 years, the last 5 years, we introduced 40 major pieces of regulation in the middle of a crisis when everyone, they did, I think, actually an amazing job in stopping everything burning down. But when you act under that pressure, and when you have 40 separate pieces of legislation, no one can foresee the cumulative impact or the connections between them. So to have a sensible look, to see whether it's working overall in the way that you'd hoped, have you got the balance right, I think makes sense. And it's one of the reasons why, if you want to encourage investment in infrastructure, which I think generally in Europe people would say was a good thing, that we're going to look at some of the rules that were put in place on Solvency II on insurance companies to see, in particular, to see whether in terms of encouraging their investment into infrastructure, whether we need to look at some of that again.
The last commission, the previous commission, was described, I think, by the European Banking Association as schizophrenic on shadow banking, but it sounds as if you're off the couch now. Let's open up the discussion and invite comments and questions to the commissioner. Yes, please. Could everybody remember to introduce themselves?
Aris Kokinos from Eurobowl.com. Can we hear your opinion on the impact of a possible Grexit of the Greek crisis on the capital markets union? How do you assess it?
I haven't got a huge amount to say on that because, as you know, the preoccupation of the Commission, of the Eurogroup, of the Greek government is to work as hard as we all can to try to ensure that the outcome that you invite me to speculate on doesn't happen. So I'm going to stick on that and repeat the boring line that we're working to try and do that. And actually, I mean, genuinely, my genuine answer is that speculating on kind of hypothetical situations, particularly at the moment, is not helpful. So I think if we can overcome these gaps that remain with the clock ticking away loudly, that would be good for everyone.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Commissioner, a question.
Can I ask you to introduce?
That's Francesco Di Lodovico from the European House, Ambrosetti. I'm tempted about the occasion is too nice. To what extent the outcome from the UK election is helpful to you in achieving this ambitious project of the Capital Market Union? Looking the same line of questioning on the other way around, to what extent the Capital Market Union could be helpful in keeping UK within the European Union?
That's a good and fair question. Actually, I think of the two issues as being separate. So when I say, which I believe, that the Capital Markets Union is a project for all 28 member states, and I just think of it as a classic single market project, I mean that. I mean, so that it doesn't for me have a kind of political significance in the way that your question suggests, and I think it is extremely important. And I was discussing this yesterday in Ireland, where people were saying, "Well, this needs to work for small member states as well as big member states. It needs to work for those with the developed capital markets as well as those that don't." And actually, I think when you talk to some of the member states that have the least well-developed capital markets, they're actually quite positive about the benefits that it can bring because they've got businesses that are being starved of capital, and they can see that if you can make it work properly, then someone that's got capital to invest in Paris or London and want to put it into business opportunities in Italy or wherever it might be, that can work. So I very much see them as separate. I do think it's the case that I'm struck in my new job, where obviously I talk to lots of people based in the City of London because I'm talking to the financial services sector, and a lot of Europe's financial services sector is based in the City of London. And I think the very strong message that emerges from them is that they see very clearly the benefits to their business of being part of a big single market. And, you know, I think they are supporters, therefore, of the single market, and they would, therefore, I guess, support the Capital Markets Union as being, you know, the manifestation of a big single market project. One thing I've learnt over the years in politics is never take the electorate for granted. So I think when the time comes for a referendum, the British people will, you know, they will make their mind up, they'll look at the facts, they'll subject the arguments that are made to, you know, quite a lot of careful scrutiny. I think they'll take it in a very hard-headed, kind of pragmatic British kind of way. And I think it'll be a decision of the head, more than it might in some places be a decision of the heart. But I think they'll look at the case, they'll look at the evidence, they'll look at the benefits that come from membership of the single market. They'll look at the irritations and the frustrations, and then they'll, you know, they'll make their mind up. But I do see them fundamentally as kind of different issues.
Thank you. Any more questions, comments? In which case, I'm going to risk being a bit technocratic and going back to something we touched on but didn't really explore, and that's TTIP. TTIP, in the eyes of some of us, I guess my own, is a reopening of a whole area, list of areas where we and the Americans had long agreed to disagree. But they're very important if you're going to really create a transatlantic economy. I wonder where has the discussion within TTIP on financial services and banking supervision and what have you, where has that got to? And to what extent is there still a risk that it could be a deal breaker for the whole thing?
So, for those who may not have been following it quite so closely, the part of what we're trying to negotiate through TTIP is to do with financial regulation. Why is that important? Because if you've got, which we have, highly regulated markets in financial services, then the terms of access to those markets through regulation and making sure you've got regulations working in both markets that are consistent is obviously extremely important. So that's why we've been arguing that we need to have a better system of trying to get more cooperation to implement globally agreed standards. And the practical reason for that, at the moment, there's, which some of you may know, there's been a long-running issue to do with getting equivalents over central counterparties' clearinghouses so that America and the EU will recognise each other's systems. This has been going on for quite a long time, and it causes, you know, uncertainty, and people need to have clarity. And that is, I think, a reflection of the fact that although an awful lot of the framework we operate within is kind of agreed at the global level, how it's implemented, you know, there, which is fair enough, but, you know, there are differences. And if you can try to find a way to make the process of working together and talking together work better, you can reduce the prospects of there being these disagreements that then cause the, you know, uncertainty in the marketplace. So that's the thinking behind it. In terms of where has it got to, we are still discussing it. And I think in the nature of it, and your question is, you know, how is it likely to end? Is it going to be a showstopper? I think, like all elements of a deal, you know, we'll know when we get to the end of the deal. because you know there will be obviously a series of discussions that still have to be gone through until you get to the final shape, and this will be one of those aspects that we will be discussing. But I'm hopeful that at the end of it, we will end up with a better system of working together on financial regulation, because I think for the EU and the US, who make up about 70% of the world's total trade on the markets, if we can be working together sensibly, setting the standards and implementing them effectively together, that makes a lot of sense for us and for Europe and for them in terms of the global challenges that are coming down the track from other parts of the world.
The global governance aspect is clearly very important, and indeed the Chinese are against TTIP for precisely that reason. They think that it is a transatlantic plot to sort of fix the global governance rules where they are, rather than more in the direction of emerging economies. The European Commission, I know you have one of many portfolios in the Commission, but the European Commission is strangely silent about global governance issues. Do you expect that to change?
Well, I think I'm not sure I would say that we're silent about it. I think that the question of how you make various moving parts in global governance, because there isn't one, there are a number of bodies looking at different issues, whether it's at the Financial Stability Board or at Basel or IOSCO, whatever. The question of how you make that work as effectively as possible is an extremely important one, and I think people reflect on that the whole time. I think at the moment the European Parliament is looking at that and working on a report as to how you can try and make sure the systems are working well. And I think some of the issues that arise from that are partly to do with European influence within them. But I think there is also a question to do with accountability, because these are bodies with huge influence in terms of the decisions that they take. Over the years, in all sorts of systems, people have taken the view that politicians ought to devolve decision-making in certain important areas away from them to experts, because people have thought that political interference and things like, in the old days, setting interest rates or timings to coincide of decisions to coincide with electoral cycles is not good. So let's have independent bodies, let's outsource this decision-making to clever people drawn around the world who are not driven by political motivations. And that is a pattern that's been happening over, I think, quite a long period of time, partly as some political systems have lost some self-confidence in where they are. And that's been a pattern. But then, of course, what you are creating in that is a set of institutions that will be independent, which you want, but they will not be democratically accountable because you have set them up not to be and to be swayed by political considerations. So I think that question of how you get the balance right between independence but also being answerable for those decisions which have huge repercussions on the lives of millions is an extremely important question, to which I don't think as yet we have completely satisfactory answers, because the situation is evolving.
Commissioner, I know you have to go. I'm going to offer an opportunity, a last opportunity, for people to put questions, and I have one more question myself.
Thank you. My name is Susanne Metzler from the representation of North Rhine-Westphalia. Commissioner Hill, I know that the financial transaction tax is not under your portfolio, but some of the participants a few days ago during the conference, Capital Markets Union, raised this issue as counterproductive. What's your view on that? Thank you.
Yeah, well, as you say, that's not on my patch. I have always, as it happens, taken the view on a lot of these issues that if you can operate, agree things at a global level, that goes back to our earlier conversation, that makes the most sense, because I think to do things in a way that's not at a global level, you risk the unintended consequences. That said, there are a number of member states who want to take this idea forward. The Commission's giving them technical support. From my point of view, I think my only point would be that when they think about that, that to try and develop that idea in a way that doesn't cut across what we're trying to achieve, to encourage and strengthen market-based activity.
Thank you. Any others? No more. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Robert Tannenplatz, I'm a strategist. You were talking, I wish you good success with to create this internal financial markets. You didn't talk about the banks, the major players. We got in last year's stress tests. Some of them got to it. Few didn't succeed. But everybody says those stress tests were somewhat artificial, not really highly performing. And nowadays, whatever could be the exit of Greece, everybody's talking about the Mediterranean banks. Whatever the solution could be. And what about the banks? What are you going to do with that?
Well, just a couple of quick points. Firstly, I think that what I'm trying to do with the Capital Markets Union, first of all, I see as being complementary to the important role that banking plays in the European economy. So I don't see it as being an either-or, and a good example, I think, of that is our proposals on securitization, which I think if we can get that right, that would be a way of helping banks free up their balance sheets themselves, do more lending, and be actively engaged in the European economy. So I think the two go together. And it's also true, when I talk to the banks about Capital Markets Union, actually their line has been to be supportive about this role, and that's big banks as well as small banks. In terms more specifically on where we are with banking union and some of those points that you raised, I think that the, as I said in my earlier remarks, I think that the measures that were taken to put banking union in place were extremely significant. And as a result of those measures, as a result of the changes that were made, banks are much better capitalized, they're stronger, they're more resilient. The stress tests that you mentioned, carried out last year, actually I think were widely accepted as being more rigorous, robust and thorough than the earlier ones. And I mean, I think as an example of that, when I was in Washington, where one might think that people might have said, oh, I'm not so sure about the rigor of the European stress tests, that wasn't what people were saying. And I think the acceptance of the rigor of those tests is, as I say, is widespread. And I think the trust in the people running the SSM and the new people coming in to run the SRB, I think, is high. I think we've got good people. And I think that, therefore, things are stronger and better than they were. There obviously are still issues that need to be addressed around non-performing loans, around other issues. But I think overall, the system, the European system of banking, is stronger than it was and much more resilient.
One last very quick question. We started off by agreeing that your portfolio looks technocratic, but is in fact profoundly important to the development of the European economy. You're confronting all these problems at a time when the European Union is about as popular as the banks. What can you do, maybe what are you doing, to get public opinion around Europe on your side, to make it clear that this isn't another case of Brussels meddling, but this is really structurally important to the future of Europeans and their living standards?
Well, I think in a way, in the same way that the banks have been recapitalized, I think that we can work to make sure that the Commission and the institutions are recapitalized. And I think that you do that in part by some of the ways that the new Commission is trying to operate. So fewer things, more priorities. You know, the mantra of big on the big things, small on the small things, I think is absolutely right. I think the work that Mr. Timmermans is doing, both to legislate less, I mean, I think one of the kind of key figures, facts for me that I would always try and tell people when I travel around, when I talk to national parliaments, when I go to the UK, is that this year the Commission's bringing forward one-fifth as much new legislation as it typically did in a previous year. So your question as to how do you show that you're trying to do things that are relevant and you're not interfering, going into the nooks and crannies, the old Douglas Hurd phrase, I think partly do less better. I think then flowing from your sense of priorities, making that linkage between what you're trying to do and growth and jobs, which I think is the top preoccupation. And then I think all of us as commissioners have to think about the work that we do and kind of turn the telescope round from thinking about the legislative process and turn it round and think, how can I deliver things that will deliver tangible benefits for the citizens of Europe? So one of the things I want to do later this year is look at retail financial services, but look at it not from a kind of structural institutional point of view, but for me, going back to the basics of what the single market is about, is how can we try to create the conditions whereby citizens can have are able to buy products and have choice, better service, lower price than they currently can. And I think if you can show that you're focused on trying to help create jobs, if you can show that you're doing things that as a result of it, they're getting a better deal than they were getting before, and that you're not rushing around trying to do lots of things, dissipating your energy, but you've understood what it is that they're concerned about. I think that helps. I think it's very important that the Commission goes and talks in member states, goes to national parliaments, explains what we're doing. And I think, again, wherever I've been going, I'm getting there's a recurring feedback that this Commission is much more out there talking, being questioned by parliaments, by media, by citizens, and that's been noticed, and I think that's right that we should do that. And I think if you can manage to do that and stick to those priorities, which, you know, we have set out very clearly, Mr. Juncker has identified those, we're now working through delivering them, then I think you start to show that what you're doing is related to people's lives.
Commissioner, thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much. My thanks to Jonathan Hill, but also to North Rhine-Westphalia for playing host to this evening's discussions. Thank you very much.